The Art Spot with Art Minius on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome to the Art Spot on WCHL, and we have a remarkable program for you today. We have with us David Amram, composer of more than 100 orchestral and chamber music works, jazz and folk musician, written the score for Broadway and for films including Splendor in the Grass and The Manchurian Candidate, author of three books, scored the landmark 1959 documentary Pull My Daisy, narrated by Jack Kerouac, friends of seemingly every major creative force of the 20th century and early 21st century. Welcome to the Art Spot, David.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on your show, and I'm so looking forward to coming back to North Carolina.
We can't wait to have you here in the first week of April. And we also have with us on the Art Spot today, Hassan Malehi from the Department of Romance Languages at UNC Chapel Hill, who is the mastermind behind David Amram's visit to Chapel Hill on April 1st through 4th, where we'll be concluding on the 4th with an Evening with David Amram concert at the Art Center at 8 o'clock on Thursday night, April 4th. Welcome to the Art Spot, Hassan.
Well, thank you very much, Art. I'm very pleased to be here. It's nice to be talking to David with you.
Indeed. This will be a fun show. And perhaps we should start with Hassan giving us a little lay of the land of the events happening on the 1st through 4th of April.
Okay, yes. Well, it's more or less a David Amram festival. I've titled it on the press release, Celebrate David Amram. And we're going to cover the gamut. We hope we'll hear every type of music that he plays, and we will introduce the public, the university campus, but also the general public in a series of events to the life and work of David Amram. We will start before his arrival on Monday night, the 1st of April at 7 p.m. With the film David Amram, The First 80 Years, which is directed by Lawrence Cram and came out in 2011. It came out for not long after David's 80th birthday. Yes, he is 80 years old and still touring. How many days a year do you tour, David, about?
Well, actually, I'm 82 now, so
yes,
80 was the good old days.
Yeah, 80 was the good old days. You're 82 now, and well, and you're touring constantly, aren't you?
Well, Dizzy Gillespie, who, of course, was from nearby South Carolina, from Gerard, lived in Englewood, New Jersey, which was about 4 minutes from New York City over the George Washington Bridge. He said, man, even in Englewood, he said, every time I leave New York, I'm on the road.
Yeah.
So essentially, I live in a little farm here in Putnam Valley, New York, and when I'm not composing music or working in my next book called David Amram, The Next 80 Years,
mm-hmm.
I'm anywhere that I get called, whether to guest conduct a symphony, play at a folk festival, be in a wonderful residency like I'll be with you at Chapel Hill, or whatever it is, I go there because it's something that I always enjoy doing and grateful to be able to do, and hopefully can share those blessings that have been bestowed upon me all my life with people who knew more than I did, that showed me a lot of stuff, which has helped me as a composer, conductor, player, musician, and person. And I try to share that with other people. And that's so rewarding that I forget to act my age and don't even have a chance to mature that properly. You have to be responsible when you get older, but I told my kids, you mature too quickly, it can be dangerous for the health.
Indeed.
Yeah, well, your youthfulness, your youthful energy is much appreciated everywhere you go, I believe. So I'll just continue with just the outline of the events that are taking place. Again, David Amram, The First 80 Years, a 90-minute documentary, Monday, April the 1st, in 305 Dye Hall on the UNC campus at 7 p.m. That event is free and open to the public. David arrives on Tuesday, April the 2nd in Chapel Hill, and that evening at the Varsity Theater on Franklin Street, we'll be showing from the Ackland Museum, actually. It's part of the Ackland Film Forum, The Manchurian Candidate, the 1962 film directed by John Frankenheimer with Frank Sinatra, Janet Leigh, Lawrence Harvey, and a number of other stars of the time, scored by David Amram. We'll be showing that, followed by the avant-garde film from 1959, the Robert Frank film, Pull My Daisy, score conducted by David Amram, titled titled Song by David Amram. Lyrics, of course, by Jack Kerouac, Allen Ginsberg, and Neil Cassidy. David Amram also acts in the film, okay? And David will attend the screening, and there'll be a Q&A afterwards, okay? That is free for students with valid high school or college ID, $4 for all others.
Yes, indeed. And folks can get those tickets at artcenterlive.org or by calling 919-929-2787. With a career as amazing and diverse as David, it's hard to pick a good starting point. So, you know, in the documentary, The First 80 Years, and there's one spell in about 30 seconds where David quotes from Greg Corso, Hondo from the store in Luckenbach, Texas, Mingus, and Bird. And that just suggests all the adventures that our guest has had through these first 82 years. Perhaps because it's convenient, we can arbitrarily start with Jack Kerouac. How did you get to know him? Take us back to the village in the 50s.
Well, back in 1956, and I'm sure some of your younger listeners going to high school and college can remember what a good time that was. And if not, ask your grandparents, and they'll tell you. It was really fun being in New York City as a kind of a hayseed. I had just come there. I was played with the great Charles Mingus. I was starting work at Shakespeare in the Park. Joe Papp's Free Shakespeare before it even got in the park. I've met painters and artists and poets and musicians, met Woody Guthrie and a whole bunch of fantastic people. And I was at a bring-your-own-bottle party at a painter's loft in the village. And this young man with a red and black checkered shirt, looking just like a Canadian lumberjack, came up, handed me a piece of paper and said, play for me. Then he took the paper back before I could even see what was on it, and he started reading. I had my French horn and my penny whistles with me. There was no piano at that place. And when I began to play, I got the same feeling that I did when I played with Sonny Rollins, later on when I worked with Leonard Bernstein, and all these great musicians, when I played with Willie Nelson later on, all these fantastic people. And when you play with them, you don't say, who are you? What are your credentials? You just get a feeling that they're listening to you, and you are therefore kind of in their world and listen high to them, and then something happens that you never thought would happen. This can happen with anybody. It happens in sports all the time when the basketball players or hockey players or football or baseball players do something incredible at that moment. Yeah. And Jack Kerouac was always a person who was there at that moment.
Fantastic. And let me interrupt you because we do need to take a break at this particular moment, and we will start up right back at that moment when we resume on the Art Spot with David Amram. We are back on the Art Spot with David Amram, who is talking about Jack Kerouac and how he was at that moment.
Yes, and why don't you tell us what those shows were like? I mean, what was the audience response like? What was the crowd like?
These were just at Painter's Loft.
Yeah.
When we began to do it, it wasn't even a show. Everybody showed up either with a poem, with a little picture they'd drawn, with a dance step, with a joke, with a recitation from Shakespeare or Baudelaire or Beowulf or something that they'd written, or a bottle of wine, or some Dr. Brown's black cherry soda, or just their good-natured selves. In Jack's case, I think he just brought his good-natured self and a bunch of papers that he'd written. This was 1956, before On the Road came out. So we were both what was later written in an interview as total zeros in terms of the New York concrete jungle asphalt monstrosity kind of megapolis of everybody trying to climb up that impossible pole towards Nowheresville, which is a way of saying, in a longer sense than necessary, when someone asked me, what was it like being a kid, being in New York with all those artists? I said, at that time, it was like 10,000 people all sitting around one hamburger. so we both were free to do whatever we wanted, and we had such a good time bumping into each other that eventually we started doing it on park benches, coffee houses, after-hours places, artist parties, until we were asked to stop, just for fun. So when we gave our first public readings, we actually almost had kind of like routines that we could do, although I never knew what Jack was going to do, whether he was going to make up something and do what they call freestyling today, which I also would do when he played the piano, or other people would sit in, or whether he would read his work or someone else's work. It was just so much fun. And I also found out, of course, that he loved Charlie Parker, whom I met in 1952, and we both agreed that now's the time was what Charlie Parker himself said about that song, which is, now will always be the time, because now is the right time. The other thing that was amazing, to complete a circle, is that Jack's sister, Nin, had lived in North Carolina, and he was very affectionate about North Carolina, having visited there and loving the South. And my grandmother, Beulah Butterlowski, was from Cameron, North Carolina.
Yes, we have her stories in the special collections at the library.
Isn't that a mind-blower? And it turns out that she had her poem published in Atlantic Monthly in 1911. Wow. All Kevin's for the special collections and for Google.com, because between the two of them, you can find just about anything that you need to know. And, of course, when they had a wonderful conference at Chapel Hill a few years ago, Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Barney Ross, and these amazing people all came down to what I believe was about the nicest conference I can ever recall about Jack Kerouac, next to the one that Hassan is going to be doing with us, of course. And, it was much fun to see how much Jack's work was appreciated in North Carolina in the 21st century as a writer, as a great American artist, not as the king of the Beat Generation and all that other stuff, which is a way of dismissing someone with a stereotype. We don't refer to Truman Capote, Eudora Welte, Langston Hughes, Thomas Wolfe, and the young Tom Wolfe, and William Faulkner. No one, if anyone said they were a redneck writer, they would be thrown out of the room and sued. They all were from the South, and they all were great writers. But you don't determine them by a dismissive term like beatnik or beat. So Jack Kerouac finally has been appreciated as a great American writer. Just as Ernest Hemingway, we don't say a lost generation writer. He's Ernest Hemingway, and so is F. Scott Fitzgerald and the people of the 20th century whom we admire from that time. I wanted to mention that because a lot of young folks say, well, I like this Jack Kerouac because he was beat. Well, that's something that Jack himself said he felt was more like beatific. Mm-hmm. From his Franco-American background, being a devout Catholic, he studied the Beatitudes, and they meant something to him in terms of how he wanted to live his life. And he was so far removed from the stereotype of Maynard G. Krebs on the Dope Thriller Show, beating out the bongos with no time, wearing a beret, and talking like a monosyllabic moron. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Certainly, it was great entertainment. But that really had nothing to do with Jack Kerouac any more than the Kardashian sisters has to do with William Shakespeare.
Right.
And someone who once lived in Appalachia, the irony of a West Virginian playing Maynard G. Krebs is not lost on me. And I still remember 35 years later, a professor in Greenlaw Hall here at the university commenting negatively on the copy of The Dharma Bums in my hand as I walked down the hall one day, because that wasn't serious literature.
Now, the beats are very encrusted.
The same thing about Dante with his terza rima. Here he was using what was then kind of almost like what rappers or hip-hoppers would do with their genius poetry, often genius poetry, much of which doesn't get on the radio, but you're lucky enough to hear it. You say, wow, how can those people create that? And Dante used the same thing in his time for the terza rima, and the Divine Comedy and other classics of his were so terrific that what was considered to be défendu, they say in French, absolutely not up to par, became the norm, and now it's something that we study as a great classic form. Just people said that Charlie Parker was playing the wrong notes and that Jackson Pollock didn't know how to draw an egg or paint.
Sure,
and now,
yeah.
of course, those opinions change over time. And that's why I'm so thrilled to come back to Chapel Hill again and to work with Hassan and the students and the folks in the community, hopefully to contribute something. And I also have a great list of all people from North Carolina that I've been blessed to know in my life who have made an enormous contribution to the arts.
Oh, wonderful. Including Thelonious Monk, I believe. From the same town as Jack's sister lived. We
Rocky
will be
Mount.
Rocky Mount, North Carolina, 252.
Yes,
we will be back on the Art Spot with David Amron and Hassan Malehi right after these important messages.
Need your local culture fix? The Lifestyle section of chapelboro.com is the only place to go for food and dining, restaurant views, health tips, fashion, and local culture commentary. Want to know what the best shows and venues to attend? Lifestyle has show listings for Deepak, Cat's Cradle, and the Art Center, and many more. And be sure to check back after the show for reviews and commentary. There's even information on local neighborhoods and schools. Keep yourself in style with Chapel Boro's Lifestyle.
Welcome back to the Art Spot on WCHL and chapelboro.com. Visiting today with Hassan Malehi from UNC and the great David Amron, calling into us from his life on the road as a working musician. what drew you out to Hollywood? How did you come to have the opportunities to score Splendor in the Grass and Manchurian Candidate?
Well, Splendor in the Grass we did in New York City. That was all done in New York City. And I was lucky enough to work with John Frankenheimer when they needed a composer for a production of Turn of the Screw, Henry James' great play. Ingrid Bergman starred in it and won an Emmy. And he liked my music so much that when he did a film called The Young Savages, he had me do the score, my first film. And that was my first time I went to Hollywood. I have a whole great chapter of that in my book, Vibrations, of that American dream and realizing the nightmare that it actually was. And then for the Manchurian Candidate, since Frank Sinatra liked opera and liked jazz, and they wanted a composer that wrote their own music rather than someone who hired a team of ghostwriters and cranked something out that sounded like whatever was supposed to be hip for that particular period, I had the chance to do the very best I could. John Frankenheimer said, David, do what the film tells you to do.
So Sinatra had something. Sinatra was involved in choosing you.
Yes, otherwise I never would have gotten chance to even be considered.
Yeah, that's what I assume.
I didn't even meet Frank Sinatra because they're playing with Charlie Mingus and Oscar Pettiford and Lionel Hampton and all these great, great players.
Yeah.
He was aware of me, and I guess he'd seen the theater things that I had done and my opera and a lot of other things that were done at that time. So I was fortunate enough to be able to be chosen to do that and allowed to do the very, very best that I could. And when I was done doing that score, and the film got a lot of appreciation, along with Splendor in the Grass, I was told that I could be hired to do 7 films in 1 year. Mm-hmm. I was paying $85 a month rent at my place in the village. I said, wow, I could go out there for a whole year and become a millionaire. The only problem is, I said, I can't possibly write that much good music, orchestrate it, conduct the play in it, choose the musicians, and do a really good job.
Not even David Amram, who can go 60 hours without sleep, could do that.
No, and they looked at me as if I had a mental problem, and they said, that's why you have your ghostwriters and your orchestrators. And said, I don't do that. I'm a composer. So I packed it up, 1962, went back to my $85 a month apartment, and continued in my impossible path of trying to be a classical composer.
That's beautiful, and we're certainly glad you avoided the temptations of Hollywood and followed the course you have. David Amron will be in Chapel Hill April 2nd through 4th, concluding with a performance at the Art Center on the evening of April 4th. Thanks so much for being with us today, David and Hassan Malehi.
Well, thank you, Art. And thank you, David. It was great to talk to you today.
And I thank you. I thank Hassan for what you're doing to bring all the young folks some of that wonderful, fresh, informative knowledge that you have and the understanding of Kerouac, which has not made it to the university circuit yet. So you'll be one of the first ones to clean house, and that's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
And I wish all the listeners to your radio station all health, and thank heavens there are radio stations in the United States that still do what Marconi dreamed of when he invented the technology, which is to spread good information of lasting value.
Thanks so much, David. Thanks for listening to The Art Spot.